Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is NFL Sunday with Rich Keefe, Christian Fourier, and Jermaine Wiggins. Now broadcasting from our Best Yet studios, here's Rich Keefe with Super Bowl champions Christian Fourier and Jermaine Wiggins.
Edition of NFL Sunday. Rich Keefe here. No Wiggy, no Fourier, but we got Tom Ekern from NBC Sports Boston in for the full 4 hours as we take you up until 1 o'clock at the midway point of Wild Card Weekend. 3 games in the books from yesterday, which we'll get to. We'll preview the 3 games that are coming your way this afternoon. But first, good morning, Tom. How are you, sir?
I am on top of the world. I could not be happier. It's a personal best, and I can't wait for the next 4 hours.
How about it? How about it? Mm-hmm. What a weekend. Now, it's crazy. You know, it's weird having the Patriots not involved, but just as a football fan, I was a little hesitant, Tom, I'll be honest. And they're like, we're going to add another wild card team. I'm like, you're kind of watering down the playoffs a little bit. But when you go back-to-back triple headers, I can't complain about
that. No. And I didn't feel like it was watered down terribly anyway. I mean, when you look, football team is in the playoffs, so it's watered down by its very definition. And then football team shows up, and Heinicke, all night long to Rich, every time I heard Heinicke, I just kept thinking, I'm not going to pay a lot for this muffler.
See, I go Heineken. I immediately was thinking nice, delicious beers in a green the other can direction. Or bottle. Yeah.
But great competitive games, and I think they're going to be fascinating today as well, because I think this slate is actually a little bit better than last night's.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think the middle game was kind of a letdown, and we can get into the Seattle Seahawks. A lot of takeaways from yesterday. But you mentioned Taylor Heinicke, and if you didn't know, not you, Tom, but if the listener didn't know that he was a member of the Patriots practice squad at one point, you would have, because they hit you over the head with it during the broadcast last night. But did you have any interaction with this guy when he was here?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
And, I mean, he's not a huge human either, so he might have been easily confused with an equipment kid or something like that. I mean, sure. It's just really, I mean, the equipment people don't talk much, nor do the practice squad guys. So I'm not stunned. But, you know, it's interesting because when we look at what the Patriots will do with the quarterback position, I'm not saying the woods are full of Tyler Heinickes, and I'm not saying that Taylor Heinicke is – en route to a storied NFL career. We've seen this scads of times. But it's worth looking at what are the skills that he brought.
Yeah. I'm telling you, he was watching him just flick the ball. Like, he was making these throws, and he also got let down. How about some of the drops? Like, he's not exactly working with the greatest receiving core. I think, you know, McLaurin's very good, but, I mean, the Sims is, like, okay. Like, he's not working with a lot, but he threw the ball well, and then his ability to run. I mean, again, it's one game, but it's a playoff game.
But it was
so it's how do teams, you think, evaluate that one performance?
They look at, in my estimation, decisiveness and poise. And then you get to the physical things of accuracy, and all those things were on point, especially late in the game when the situation was getting to, okay, we need 2 scores, but we don't need to start whipping it all over the lot. I mean, he showed, and Josh Allen was younger, but he showed a level of poise that Josh Allen couldn't show last year in his second year. This is Josh Allen's third year, right?
Yes, third year, yeah.
in Josh Allen's second year as an NFL player, he was a hell of a lot more rudderless than we saw Taylor Heinicke be last night. You know, like, so that decision-making, poise, and understanding where the ball should go, I think all of those things are going to speak well to him going forward and having a career. Who knows? Again, it can be 3 year, it can be 5 year, it can be 9 year, but he made himself, he built traction.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I also, you know, you go back to when Matt Flynn came in as a backup and lit up the Patriots, and then he ended up getting a huge contract with Seattle and ended up not even starting there. So like, we have seen guys flash, but I look at this, and it was the way that he played, the way he moved around. You mentioned the decisiveness, but just the way he could kind of – good arm strength, but he's very athletic too, showed toughness. Like, he got hurt, went back to the locker room, came back into the game. Just a lot to like. I mean, I don't know if he's a starter in the NFL, but man, he looked good and he was fun. It was a good story because going into the game, Tom, as soon as you saw that Alex Smith,
oh my God,
was inactive, you're like, this is going to be a rout. Like, too bad. Like, I was hoping for a good game, maybe a good pass rush by Washington would lead to a good game, and I was like, no chance. But then you got it. Like, it was a really, really turns out an entertaining game.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that you look at the Bucs and their path and where they have to go and what they have to go through. It's not horrendous, but they are going to end up with New Orleans. Can they rebound against New Orleans? And then they'd have a Packers team that they would deal with that they already beat the hell out of. But what were your impressions of the way the Buccaneers played? Because it's very mixed for me.
Yeah.
You can see why they're so friggin' good. They overwhelm you with talent. Leonard Fournette had a fantastic game. Evans had a great game. Godwin was god-awful.
Yeah.
And he's a great player. But to me, there's so much more left on the table that they could. They should have hung 50 on them, and they couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the way they played really this season was almost the way they played in this game. Like, if you go drive by drive, they either look like, you know, a fantasy football team brought to life, or it's like three and out, and like you're wondering if they're running the wrong routes. Like, you know, Godwin and Evans run a route together, and Brady's like looking at them like, what is this? But then on the next possession, everybody's wide open, and they just fly down the field. And then I also thought another takeaway was I like their defense. Like, I like a lot of the players on their defense. But how many times were guys on the football team just wide open? And, you know, to Heinicke's credit, like, he was hitting them. So, yeah, I thought even within the game, you got some of the best stuff that the Bucs offer. But then also how, all right, it's like still not a finished product even after 17 games.
And I don't even know if they were breakdowns. And the way Tony Dungy was genuflecting at the altar of Todd Bowles all night, that he's going to do what he's going to do. Well, maybe it's time to alter it instead of blitzing every second down, them picking it up.
I know.
And then having oceans to throw to for Sims 1 and Sims 2. Stop doing that. Play coverage. Make Taylor Heinicke think it through.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't make him think it through. That would have been like, take a Belichick coach defense. Would Taylor Heinicke have lit them up?
I can't imagine.
No, they would have played coverage.
Yeah.
Kept them in the pocket. What? But these teams who are, we do what we do. We do what we do.
Yep.
You can't have it. And that's why you end up being in a friggin' dogfight. And honest to God, did you sense that this might go to overtime when they were down 8 and they got the ball back late?
I was praying for it. I was like, here we go. Oh my God, they got a chance. And like, this kid's like, doesn't know any better, and he's just going to march down the field. He's going to score, and then it's going to come down to the 2-point conversion. That's what I was thinking was going to happen.
How did Brady play?
I thought he was pretty good. I do. I thought some of his throws. Now I know whatever the stats were, 22 of 40, but I thought he made some great throws. I thought he played pretty well. What do you think?
No, I thought he was. I thought he played well.
Yeah.
He went into a funk in the third when they had the 3-and-out. And then sometimes he gets it, and certainly it's the same thing as it was here, but his urgency ends up tipping into just so angry
I know.
That he's so combustible that you can almost feel puckering throughout the entire offense at times.
Yeah.
And you know, at the end of the game, he's so, you know, throws so many bouquets at everybody else around the offense, Godwin and Evans. But during the game, he's flipping out that I can't imagine those guys, Rich, being able to play at their very, very best sometimes because of the weight of Tom Brady's expectations and the fear of his ire on national TV. That's the weird thing. Brady's played now, what, 41 playoff games on national television. These guys don't want to get shamed on national television by Tom Brady. He's got to throttle it back, in my estimation.
Really? Yeah, and weren't they bad in primetime this year? They struggled. They had, the Saints games, but then they also had some close games, and they didn't look right there. And I wonder if for them, because, again, Godwin and Evans aren't used to playing in the playoffs, and I just wonder if just getting that win, even though it was against a team that was under 500, just like some of these teams that we saw, you know, in the Buffalo Bills, which we can get to later, but like just to get that win, if that sort of resets things a little bit for next week. Because you're right, like with Evans and Godwin, they have so much talent, but it just, and even when they have good games overall, there are certain plays that you look at them and you're kind of scratching your head, and you're saying like Brady's kind of either rolling his eyes or outright screaming at him on the field. And man, they're still not on the. They're still not exactly on the same page, are they?
And the funny thing is, Brady is because he is so demonstrative, because he is so good, because he is looked at as a guy who knows what he wants on each play. Mm-hmm. We do look to him after an incompletion or a play gone awry to see what his reaction is. Who screwed it up? And without fail, he's going to give one. Almost without fail, even if it's a downturned mouth and eyebrows up, or to screaming at somebody. But, you know, I think that, you know, there were throws last night. There was an under pressure throw to Godwin that was probably around his shins that I think Dungy said it was kind of on Godwin. And then there was another diving catch that Godwin failed to make that almost turned into a pick, didn't turn into a pick. Mm-hmm. Those are tough chances.
Right.
Godwin had drops.
Yeah.
Hellacious drops.
Yeah, not a great game for him.
But, you know, I think the best throws that Brady made were the one where he got off the Schneid and threw it to Miller for a third down conversion, which he had to have.
Throw.
And then the insane 35-yarder to Mike Evans down the left sideline when they were trying to kill clock.
Yeah, like some of those throws, like if anybody's doubting whether he can still make them, he can. He absolutely can. And I just think they are, even when they were kind of stumbling over themselves in the regular season, I just thought there's way too much talent for them not to still be a major threat in the NFC. Like, I wouldn't want to, as good as the Packers are, I know the Saints have their number this year, but I wouldn't want to face the Bucs. I just wouldn't. Plus, you factor in, they're going to have to play all these games on the road, but it's not a true home field advantage this season anyway. So if it's kind of built for a wild card team to make it to the Super Bowl, this is the year for it.
100%. And honestly, if you're the Bucs, you look at it and say, we've already beaten the Packers.
Right.
And there's no way we're going to lose three times to the Saints. And even that 38-3 game, in that game, when you saw that, that was so much traceable to, okay, we went 3-0 three times and they scored every single time. Now it's 21-0 and Brady started saying, well, 21-0. Well, what do I do now?
Yep.
I start chucking.
We'll
and
never
it just
run
got
the ball
worse.
Again.
And it just got worse. And he just was, you know. So that was a victim of circumstance. They didn't play great by any stretch, but when you go against a team that's going to score a touchdown every time you go 3-and-out, and the next thing you know, I mean, the party's over. He has dug out in the past, but I wouldn't look at the Saints as being some, you know, Everest for them to try and get through. But I really wonder how Patriots fans felt last night. You know, not how they say they felt, but how they really felt watching the game. What was your emotion on a Tom Brady incompletion, completion, touchdown, at his expressions? Because that's where the tell is. Don't you agree? Your mind and your body takes over, and it registers something that maybe you didn't expect to. Because there was a point at which, and nobody is a greater Tom Brady devotee than me, I'm like, can you stop with the faces?
Yeah.
Stop. Just stop screaming at everybody.
I know. Well, it's funny because I'm with you. When it's not your team involved, you go in watching a game, maybe thinking, oh, I'm going to root for Team X. And as the game unfolds, you're like, nope, I was wrong. Like, I'm really pulling for this team. And as the game was going on, I was rooting for the Bucs. And one of the reasons why is because it just sets up better matchups throughout the playoffs. If it's Bucs-Packers, if it's Bucs-Saints again, if it happens to be Bucs-Chiefs, like, those are the best possible matchups. It does not involve football team. As good of a story as Heinicke turned out to be, Tom, like, okay, I saw him. I don't need to see him play four more games. Like, this was good. I don't need a sub 500 team moving on in the playoffs. But at the same time, if I was outright rooting for Brady and the Bucks. Why did I have that? Why did I want Heinicke to move the ball down the field with that last possession?
I see, and that's funny because I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
Because I didn't want that because, again, I think that as Patriots media members, devotees, observers, fans, whatever we are, and after you cover a guy for 20 years, you end up, you know, developing an affinity for him, too, as an individual in a way. I didn't want to have to listen to the bull crap today about they got Pete 34-31 in overtime. How's your Brady now?
Oh, my God, that would have been a show and a half.
So, as a result, I'm always rooting for what benefits me.
Yes,
so now I'm not having to sit. 381 yards for a 43-year-old. Are you out of your mind? That's unbelievable.
It is.
And what's interesting, too, is, you know, you watch it on your Twitter feeds, too, among fans that go back and forth. And some of them are a lot of fans, which is one of the great things about media these days, are as well informed as we are. And it was pointed out very quickly that, look, only Roethlisberger and somebody else threw for 300 against Washington this year. Brady just threw 381 at 43.
Yeah.
What are we
talking
about?
Right. Yeah. Good defense. Now, do you think rooting for Brady is also kind of not, you're not rooting against the Patriots or Belichick, but you're kind of like sticking it to him. You're like, see, you kind of screwed that up. Insofar as when Mookie Betts and the Dodgers were winning, and you're like, you know what? Let's go ahead and win the World Series, mm-hmm. Mookie, and then that sort of exposes the Red Sox for even a worse decision that they made. Is that can you be fully on board with the Patriots and their decision and also root for Brady, or do they contradict each other?
No, I think the most sane of us can do that.
Okay,
I think
how
the
many?
Most,
is that? It's a very few.
Very few can say, look, this is because you look at it and it worked out for both sides in terms of what they wanted. I mean, Brady for his entire career stated very plainly, I want to stay here. This is where I want to finish my career. This is why he was anxious about Jimmy Garoppolo's future here. This is why he was happy that he was dealt so that he could stay here through 45 years old. But once it became clear that they were going to continue to jerk him around contractually and just wish that he would finish his career someplace else or say he's done, then he was good to go. So it worked out best for him instead of being here for another year, kicking rocks at $22 or $23 million. And for Belichick to say, God, this is just a huge cheese glob in my gullet that I can't get around this guy's contract. When's he ever going to go? It worked out for the best. So you get to say, okay, they are where they need to be. But after you watch a season, right, Rich, of Cam Newton.
Right.
And
that's it for me.
Stidham is just so bad.
That
they didn't have a plan. You're like, why would you push away from a guy who can throw like that?
I know.
Just
see, that's what really stings. Like, if you had, even if the quarterback that you had this year was in the bottom half of the league, right? But he was 23, and you're like, okay, or 24, and you're like, all right, there's something here. Like, he's going into next year, but you don't have a 2021 starting quarterback as of right now. And that's why the Brady thing is even more frustrating. And I don't know. I think he's going to be back next year. I have a feeling 45 is realistic. How about that picture that they were tweeting out? I forget if it was ESPN or NBC.
It was on NBC.
Oh, it was NBC. Sorry.
Poor George Blanda.
Oh, my God. George Blanda looks like they just dug him out of a grave, and that was him at 43.
Dude,
and then Brady looks like he's 25.
And that is, I mean, you could do, honest to God, you could do a deep dive, 3,000-word story on all the implications of that sociologically. How did we live in the 50s, 60s, and 70s? Post World War II.
Yeah, we lived hard.
Depression, you know, era kids, because you figured at 43, so that was 1972. Our guy there was born, he was born in the 30s.
30s, yeah.
So he was a Depression era baby. who grew up in World War II, probably smoked like a chimney.
Oh, he by his skin, I would say he did. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Len Dawson smoking butts at halftime of the Super Bowl, the picture that you could see if you Google it, Len Dawson cigarettes, smoking a butt at halftime. It was a different.
Yeah, it was.
So,
yeah, George Blanda was born in 1927, and then he died in 2010. So he actually lived to be 83 years old, which is kind of more than I would have guessed.
Yeah, I mean, so he had 40 years to go after that picture was taken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's to me, that's it's so wild. I really think that stuff's fascinating.
I do too.
How has our society
I really do,
changed
it's like,
to what do we treat ourselves like?
Yeah.
My dad your dad,
yep.
my grandparents, you know, I played hoop for the last three straight days. He did, but that wasn't happening
oh, yeah.
for them at 53.
Oh, yeah, when he was your age, no chance. Yeah,
none.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty amazing. And that might even be the extremes. Well, actually, well, Brady maybe more so.
Yeah, but these are professional athletes.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I know. Crazy. Yeah, but all these guys, and if you want to get into it, like with the second jobs and like what they did after the game was over. And like,
moving ice.
Like a hobby, really. And then, that was pretty good. And then how about the stat, too, where Tom Brady just won his 31st career playoff game. Peyton Manning and Joe Montana combined have 30.
And that's why when we talk about greatest of all time, you can talk about greater passers. You can talk about, you know, as Tony Dungy did earlier this year, the toughest quarterbacks to defend and actually make a case that, okay, Elway was harder to defend than Brady, but he's probably not going to beat you. I mean, you know, at the end of the game, as great as Elway was at the end of the game, Brady's probably going to figure it out.
Yeah.
So.
I agree. Oh, and Josh, our producer, just told me another stat was he's beaten 17
yeah.
different teams.
So Brady himself has beaten 17 different teams in the playoffs.
Oh my God.
He's beaten more teams than any QB has total wins in playoff history.
You got to tweet that from the thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Fire that out.
I can tweet from my personal account. I'm not back. We don't have an NFL Sunday Twitter, but I think we may be onto something here.
We should. You know what? Now we need one.
Yeah,
that's an absurd stat. I mean, all the stats are. Now, where do you come down, not to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I know, are wins a quarterback stat? And I know there's definitely a group of people out there that say no, and, like, there's way too much attachment to wins as a QB stat. But at the same time, if you pull a Pro Football Reference, the record is right there next to the quarterback. It's not next to the wide receiver or the running back. Like, where do you come down on that?
Yes, it is. It is a is a usable quarterback stat.
Yeah,
it's not the defining stat, but getting a win in the barn, if your team is good, is important. Finding a way to win if you can't. I mean, I think everybody understands when. Look, Tom Brady's 12-4 last year was not really attributable necessarily to him. It was attributable in large part, in some ways, to the horrendous quarterbacks they faced over the first eight games. They started 8-0 last year.
Right.
And they weren't a good team.
No.
And
they didn't play anybody good, or at least quarterbacks were good. Like, it's like Roethlisberger, but you could tell he wasn't right. And then it was just backups and third string guys.
So that's what I mean. Those eight wins you started the season with, they go in Brady's pocket, but the real traceable number one reason was the opponents were embarrassingly bad.
Right. Also last night, Rob Gronkowski quiet. And I'll tell you, he started the year real quiet, and I was wrong. I said, you know, this guy's probably cooked. You know, he took a year off, but he was fighting injuries the year before or that. And I just, you know, I thought he was cooked. He ended up having a pretty productive season. You know, obviously a part of a offense that has a bunch of different guys to throw to, but he had 7 touchdowns. He had over 600 yards, and he finished the year with 45 catches, which, again, prime Gronk, you know, those are nothing numbers, but for a guy coming back out of retirement and at 31 was pretty good. Although yesterday really used as more of a blocker and didn't do a whole lot. But you know that he's capable, Tom. Like, you know he still has it in him, and teams have to prepare for him.
Yeah, and what fascinated me was how often he was singled up with Chase Young and handled him.
He still got that.
I mean, he just walled him off. There were a couple plays on a drive, and Young got around him eventually and gave a little pressure from the backside on Brady. But earlier in the drive, I mean, that's why it makes sense to have him stay in as a blocker, because a guy with the build of Chase Young, who's 6'5", 280, and can move like, you know, a 4 in the NBA, you better have somebody who's mobile. And Gronk did that. So I think he did his job there last night and what they were asking him to do. But, you know, it's funny. Early in the season, Mike Florio and I argued quite a bit about Gronk. I said, he's not bad. He's scared. And he was absolutely scared. Every problem he had early in the year had nothing to do with anything below his shoulders. He was afraid to get hit, and he was running tenderly and gingerly. And I feel bad for him, because it's eventually this second go-round is going to probably result in somebody hitting him in a thigh or a knee or an ankle. And he'll be back where he was on a surgical table.
You think he's running it back again next year?
Depends how the next month goes.
Yeah.
Depends how the next month goes, and it depends how Brady feels. And, you know, I think, do you ever sense, we probably read too much into this, what do you think Brady and Arian's disposition is towards running it back themselves with each other?
Probably not. I bet they don't love that idea. I feel like Arians, though, is more likely to just say, all right, I'm going to get out of the coaching game, and I've had a good coaching career, and I'll get into broadcasting, and, you know, I'll be happy with that, whereas Brady's going
to
play.
I just think he's at 43, more than anything else, maybe this gets to it. I've seen it all. I know it all. And this isn't to his detriment. Just get out of my way and let me do it. And that's
LeBron. It's very LeBron-like. It's
very hard to be a supervisor of somebody who's that accomplished.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's why you wonder if, like, who would even make sense there? Like, would you bring
in Byron Leftwich?
Promote Leftwich, and then
I mean, you don't want to, you don't want to get in a Steve Nash situation. We don't really have a coach.
But I mean, it's kind of closer to that. Like, I feel like LeBron. Especially, you know, even with Spoelstra, and Spoelstra was a good coach, but that was before he had won anything, and it was just LeBron's like, all right, just, you know, you can be there, but I'm running the show.
Right.
And I feel like the same thing with Brady to a certain extent.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we are going to be joined by Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer, Cleveland Plain Dealer. Get her thoughts on the Browns back in the playoffs, but without their head coach as they take on the Steelers tonight. But you can join the show throughout the morning all the way up until 1 o'clock at 617-779-7937. Talking about the three playoff games from yesterday, the three playoff games for today, and also the Patriots offseason. It is Keefe and Kern here on NFL Sunday, and it's brought to you all by Kaplansky Insurance.
The Greg Hill Show, morning 6 to 10. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Wild card weekend, three games yesterday. The Buffalo Bills got their first playoff win since 1995. They held on to a 27-24 win over the Colts. The LA Rams went into Seattle and beat the Seahawks 30-20. And Tom Brady and the Buccaneers got a 31-23 win over football team. Tom Brady finished with 381 yards passing and two touchdowns. Three games today, starting with Ravens and Titans, followed by Bears, Saints, and then the night game is Browns and Steelers. You can listen to all of them right here on WEEI. I'm Rich Keefe. We'll be joined by Mary Kay Cabot coming up next. That's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Back to more NFL Sunday with Keith, Fourier, and Wiggy.
Presented by Kaplansky Insurance, Northeast Electrical, and Zudy.
On the home for Patriots fans, WEI.
Broadcasting from our Best Yet studios, this is NFL Sunday, a wild card weekend edition. Keith and Curran here with you on WEI. Time now to go to the Harbor One hotline and bring in Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Mary, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. Curious, how is everybody feeling in Cleveland? First time in the playoffs since 2002, but they have to do it without their head coach.
You know, I think people are still really, really excited about this. I don't think it's tempering the enthusiasm too much. I think Browns fans are just so happy to finally be here for the first time in the playoffs since 2003, after the 2002 season, and they're ready to roll.
Hey, Mary Kay, thanks a lot for taking some time. Can you kind of just enumerate the losses today for our listeners? And besides Stefanski, how many players and other assistants are out unavailable?
You know, most of the other guys have come back, so there really only are about four key guys that are out with COVID now, and that's Joel Bitonio, their longest tenured player and their Pro Bowl left guard. And then you've got wide receiver Kadarius Hodge is out. Then Denzel Ward, their second best defensive player and their starting cornerback. And then the guy who would have backed him up in Kevin Johnson, another cornerback. So it takes them way far down into their depth at cornerback, so that's not going to help matters. But they did get a lot of guys back, and that helps.
Are they screwed?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And here's why I say that. First of all, Kevin Stefanski being at home is not ideal, but Alex Van Pelt is the next best thing to call plays. I mean, he was a candidate to call plays as it was. So if they did all the game planning during the week, they scripted the plays, Alex can pick up the ball from there. So not too worried about that. And then for now, what's not ideal is Bill Callahan, their offensive line coach. That's not going to help matters. He won't be able to help make adjustments when Keith Butler does whatever he's going to do with that defensive front against the Browns. So that's not going to help matters. But the Browns still have five Pro Bowlers on offense. I mean, when you think about it, they still have Austin Hooper at tight end, Jarvis Landry at wide receiver. They've still got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And then Baker Mayfield has been lights out in his last nine games, throwing 11 touchdowns against only one interception.
Was there any talk, and I know it's against league rules, but you can always make exceptions. You know, the Patriots weren't supposed to fly out day of the game like they did against the Chiefs earlier in the year and find a way to allow some of these coaches, specifically Stefanski, but you mentioned other coaches too, to be able to have communication and either set up a home office that can connect in, or was there any momentum towards that at all, or is that just not going to happen?
That was not going to happen because there's too much competitive advantage. It just opens up too many problems when you're allowing people to communicate electronically from outside of the game. It's a long-standing rule. The Browns ran into a jam with it in 2015 when their former GM, Ray Farmer, was texting impermissibly to coaches. That was Textgate back then. He got suspended for four games. I mean, you can't do it, and they can't. It's just too much competitive disadvantage for the other team. It just was never going to happen like that.
Here's what's wild about the Browns. I think that if you haven't really looked at their results, they have been outstanding since their bye week. And the teams that they've beaten have been pretty good. And even in the loss that they had to the Ravens, it was, you know, 47-42 was an amazing game. And then the Jets outlier. Who are they? Do they have a team identity yet? And is this their building block year still?
Well, the Jets game, I don't know if you know this or not, but they didn't have any of their receivers in that
game.
The game where Baker Mayfield had to go into the football game with none of his receivers. So that's a tough situation there. And he also didn't have his left tackle in that game. And they were just rattled and caught off guard. They didn't get to practice much. That one, I think, can kind of get tossed out the window in some ways. Although I think it really fired Baker up. I mean, he was so mad at himself after that game. He really came out, and there was no way he was going to lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the season finale. I think when they're all together and they're all healthy, they're a really good football team. They're a good football team because they've got really good defensive line, good offensive line, good running game, great play action game, good skill players. They can make some noise. I mean, they can even win this football game tonight. And if they do that, there's no telling what would happen. Now they'd have to go and face the Chiefs after that. The Chiefs on the road with what's going on, with the Browns defensively right now with some guys out, that would be a really, really tall order to try to beat the Chiefs on the road. But I actually think that they have a chance to win tonight, and I picked them to win.
Oh, okay. We're talking with Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer, and I am curious, how do they match up with Pittsburgh? Because they split in the regular season, although that Week 17 game, Pittsburgh wasn't exactly trotting out the A team, and when they did play back in Week 6 in Pittsburgh, the Steelers blew them out.
Well, there are some things to remember about that first game. Back then, the Steelers still had Devin Bush. He got hurt in that game, mm-hmm. season-ending injury in that game. And since then, they have also lost Bud Dupree, who had 8 sacks when he left the lineup a couple of weeks ago. And in this game tonight, they're not going to have Joe Hayden, which brings them down to a backup defensive back. And that's never good when you've got Baker Mayfield. Baker's become deadly in the red zone. I mean, mm-hmm. they are amazing in the red zone, scoring 73.6% of their trips inside the red zone. I talked to Case Keenum this week, and he said Baker is just absolutely built for the red zone. And that's going to be something to watch mm-hmm. tonight. But the Steelers team isn't what they were necessarily in that October 18th game. And the Browns, since then, they've come together. They have figured it out. Baker Mayfield has figured it out. The lights have come on. They didn't have Nick Chubb in that game. And they didn't have Wyatt Teller, one of their best guards, in that game. So things are different for this game for sure.
Mary Kay, clearly the Browns have to be extremely happy with their head coaching decision. Do you think that in hindsight it was Stefanski all the way? I know Josh McDaniels did interview, but this is exactly what they wanted to have happen, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And he is a leading candidate for NFL Coach of the Year. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets it. There's some really good competition, obviously, this year. But he's right up there to not have any kind of an offseason, to be a first-time head coach, to lead this team to 11 victories for the first time since 1994 and into the playoffs for the first time in 18 years, to do it all virtually. It was actually remarkable. And to come back from, you know, that big opening day loss to the Ravens and get this team into the playoffs, it's been something to behold. And anybody that you talk to about Kevin Stefanski just raves about him outside the building, inside the building. They really nailed it with him.
Now, you mentioned how well the Browns have played the second half of the season, all of which they played without Odell Beckham Jr. Any possibility, any appetite for them to trade him this offseason?
Well, I suppose that could happen, but I don't attribute them getting things turned around to Odell being out. I attribute it to Baker Mayfield figuring out this offense and them giving him a lot more play action. His rating on play action is 121.9, and that's like fifth in the NFL. So he is outstanding in the scheme that they're running, and I think that Odell would have been a beneficiary of that. I don't think it's because he's gone, although a lot of people like to portray it that way. That's not what it is. If they do decide to trade him, it will be because he's owed $15 million next year by the time it's all guaranteed. Right now it's guaranteed for injury mm-hmm. at a little bit more than 12 a year. So if they do decide to part ways with him, they're going to have to trade him. So those are decisions that have to be made in the offseason, but not because of his ability or his talent.
Mary Kay, just my last question, relative to the time you've spent covering the NFL and you were with, obviously, covering Bill Belichick in his first iteration as a head coach, do you watch with a little bit of fascination how this reboot here in New England develops and what Bill is like now in dealing with it compared to what it was like in Cleveland?
Well, he's tremendous at rebuilding a team, and he did it here. And to watch him do it there, again, I think will be fascinating. And, of course, the thing, and he knows this better than anybody, that you have to have is your quarterback. And you know, once you have your quarterback, then it just kind of all flows from there. And there are some really good young quarterbacks out there in the NFL right now. And it's not like you have to, you know, wait a decade for a Tom Brady to come along. There are some amazing quarterbacks, and I think you're seeing a ton of the dual threat type of quarterback come along. So that's what they need. They need to get their guy, and once they get that figured out, then I think he'll be off to the races again.
And Mary, very last thing, as a Patriots fan, what kind of chances do you give Richard Seymour at getting into the Hall of Fame this year?
You know what? I think good. I think very good. It seems like there's a big push to get more defensive guys in, so I think that helps. Mm. And you know, it's just a lot of times there becomes a log jam when there are multiple players at a certain position. They kind of cancel each other out a little bit. But I think his chances are good this year.
All right, Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer, Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Cleveland.com. Thanks so much for the time this morning, and hopefully we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks
thank
for having
me. Thank you so
me.
Much.
All right, thank you, Mary. And, of course, Browns got the last game of the weekend, Browns and Steelers. And I'll tell you, Tom, kind of I thought that this one, without Stefanski, without Petonio, without some of the guys they're missing defensively, I thought it might just be too much, but she's kind of trying to talk me into the Browns a little bit.
She has armed with information in terms of making the case. And, you know, you hear those names. You hear Betonio, for instance, down and, you know, really key guys, Bill Callahan, not being out there to be the offensive line coach against a difficult defense to deal with. But it is hard to beat a team three times. And I know that, you know, the Steelers lost in the final regular season game, but that was with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. Look, honestly, this is a game that I think is going to surprise people in the level of competitiveness. I just think it's a wild. Look at how far they've gone from the kitchen to Stefanski handoff.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I also think it's a good point because you look back when they played each other first in Pittsburgh and it was a blowout. But no Chubb for Cleveland, and then the Steelers had Bush and Dupree. So, I mean, that's a pretty big swing right there. And I don't know if it's a 31-point swing like the game was, but again, that'll be the last game. So we can get your thoughts on the three games from yesterday and the three games set for today. 617-779-7937. It is Keefe and Kern, NFL Sunday, and it's brought to you by Kaplansky Insurance.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with GameDay, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back to more NFL Sunday with Keith, Fourier, and Wiggy.
Broadcasting from our Best Yet studios. Best Yet. Shop your local grocer for the best quality and value.
On the home for Patriots fans, WEEI.
Back here on NFL Sunday, it is Keefe and Curran. Wiggy and Fourier are off today. It is a wild card weekend edition. You can join the show at 617-779-7937. You can stream the show anywhere, WEEI.com or the radio.com app. I want to get to the Bills' first win since 1995. We'll do that at the top of the hour. But yesterday, Tom, the middle game, Rams and Seahawks, and kind of that Seahawks team is a weird one, and I think just their decade run is also a weird one. They win the Super Bowl all the way back in 2013, then they famously lose the Super Bowl to the Patriots the next year, and as good as they've been, as consistent as they've been as far as, you know, 10, 11 wins in the regular season, they haven't gotten back to the conference championship game since that Malcolm Butler game.
Right.
And you just, like, again, they have Pete Carroll, they have Russell Wilson. Those are two guys that you expect to win a lot. And again, they do. They win, but not at the high level. Like, that Malcolm Butler game, I think, destroyed the Seahawks.
Oh, it certainly destroyed that iteration of the Seahawks. And now I think their difficulty in discovering who they're going to be going forward, which is a complementary team, not just one built around Russell Wilson. I mean, when you look at Russell Wilson's statistics, really, and evaluate them, the amount of offense put on his shoulders on a week-in, week-out basis is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's running, throwing, producing touchdowns. And when you look at his sack numbers, that additionally explains why their offense is very stagnant. And I think it's an offensive problem, personally. And there's too much on that player's plate in terms of making plays. And he's brilliant, but if they're poorly, they're Pete's team.
Yeah,
they're just not. I mean, that cover three crap that when you have a Richard Sherman and a Cam Chancellor and an Earl Thomas and a Bobby Wagner and Cliff Averill and everybody else and Michael Bennett up front. Holy crap. Gosh,
yeah, they were loaded. The personnel
great.
Was just so over the top.
You're so good. You better win a couple Super Bowls and compete in another. Yeah. But or one Super Bowl and almost another. But
I mean, they should have really won back-to-back Super Bowls. And then we would be looking at them a whole lot different. But
it's
they
a
win
program.
The one.
Yeah. How about this, Rich? It's a program. In the same way the Patriots have been a program.
Yeah.
But it's a flawed program in some ways, too. Like
oh,
the Ravens
sure.
are a program. The Patriots are a program.
Yep.
They're stable. But
yep. Steelers, yeah.
But there's a level that I think that they get to, and then your point's excellent, I think. It's there's too much on one guy.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it is the Russell Wilson show, and as good as he is, I mean, going into the year, I think the chalk pick was Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback, but there was a solid argument for Russell Wilson, and the way he started the year, he was playing like the best. You remember all that stuff there? Oh, he's never gotten an MVP vote. You're like, oh, he's definitely going to be the MVP this year. Well, then it just, I don't know, the season kind of took its toll on him, and he came crashing back down to earth. Now, still finished the year with 40 touchdown passes and a Pro Bowler and a great season, but it just, you know, it wasn't that MVP season. And on the flip side, Tom, you look at another team and another head coach that the Patriots have faced in the Super Bowl, and Sean McVay found a way to go mm-hmm. into Seattle with initially John Wolford, who then gets hurt, and then you have to go with Jared Goff, who's completely banged up, and they win another playoff game. Sean McVay is, I don't know if he gets enough credit. I think people were sick of it because 2 years ago,
100%.
That's all anybody talked about. You're like, oh my God, he's an offensive genius. And his memory, like, yeah, coaches have good memories. And like
they better know the starters.
Yeah, I would hope so. And so he got maybe too hyped up. But I think in reality, he is a great, great head coach. And I wonder if the Rams, even though they had their roster construction issues with some of the guys that they wanted and brought in and then had to get rid of, but they have a chance to go on maybe a 10-year run where they are competitive like this Seattle team is.
Yeah, it's building around, you know, head coach, quarterback, but more than anything else, it's system and scheme and coordinators. And that's why, you know, the fact that Josh McDaniels isn't being interviewed right now seemingly bodes well for the Patriots. And it's why they're fortunate that he didn't take the Indy job because, you know, the coordinator replacement on the defensive side of the ball to go from Wade Phillips to Brandon Staley?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
I hope I didn't misspeak on that. I've called poor Taylor Heineke Tyler 9 times already.
Yeah, Brandon Staley, yeah.
So that move has been, you know, a smart one. When you have the coordinators and you have a scheme and you have a program, you can expect a level of play, and they're morphing. That's the interesting thing, I think, too, when you think about it, Rich.
Yeah.
The ability to morph, and that's what the Patriots have, and that's what the Rams seem to be able to do, and that's what the Seattle Seahawks don't do. These teams who are, we do what we do.
Right, right.
Those are the ones who get their stuff pushed in.
Yeah, you're right. And I just think, you know, with McVay, too, when you see the programs that you call it, like the teams around the league, I feel like McVay is dealing with maybe the worst quarterback of the group. You know, Reed's got Mahomes. Belichick had Brady for a long time. Pete has Russell Wilson. Roethlisberger with Tomlin. I feel like Jared Goff is not necessarily the guy that you would want, and yet you look at the win totals. He's been able to get 11 wins, 13 wins, 9 in a missed playoff after losing the Super Bowl, and then back to 10 wins and in the divisional round at least again. So, I definitely give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, it's going to be wild to me to see how the Ravens play today. That's the most fascinating game. I kind of wish it was the NBC game tonight. Yes. It's the early one. But, you know, Lamar Jackson, who's got the most pressure on them? I think Allen and Brady had the most pressure yesterday of any players, and I think that it's Lamar Jackson today.
I think it's definitely Lamar Jackson. I also wonder if a little bit on Breeze and the Saints, just because I feel like that's
another team. They
better
annihilate them, though. But it's such a good defense. Why are the Bears where they are? Because they're a really freaking difficult defense. They beat Brady in 2019. Go ahead, sorry.
The Saints are kind of, playoff chokers. Now, I know they've had some crazy things go against them, too. Like, some of it's luck. Some of it's their own luck. So, I don't know. It's hard for me to be fully bought in on the New Orleans Saints, but you're right. I mean, of all the teams to face, that's maybe the best one. Let's go to the phones right now, and you can join us as well, 617-779-7937. Dan is in Rhode Island. He joins us next. What's up, Dan?
Morning, fellas.
How you doing?
Two quick thoughts. Watching the game last night, and you have to refresh my memory. So, surprisingly, Antonio Brown has been a pretty good soldier. Mm-hmm. Right in.
Yes.
Did the Patriots sign him to 2 years last year?
No, one.
It was just one?
It was 1 year, $9.5 million.
All right. The thing I was just thinking of is, well, he'd ever flamed out here if things had turned out differently with Brady.
Do you think it would have flamed out here? Say it again?
If he never did.
Oh, it's absolutely worth a question, Rich. Hmm. I think that, you know, how would the season have turned out differently if Antonio Brown didn't blow up, if Rob Gronkowski and Bill Belichick hadn't been at a crossroads? You know, that financially, the team would have been worse off this year, but a lot of it was tied to Antonio Brown. I still think that there would have been agitation because, to me, Dan, Bill Belichick was kind of out on that. He just wanted to reboot so badly, and it just offended his soul to be paying $22 million to Tom Brady. And as he's mentioned multiple times, everything we did for two decades was done in the best interest of Tom Brady. And while Bill at the end of that can say, and well, it should have been, there is a resignation, I think, Rich, when he has said that. We can't live like that.
I know. And I remember when he said that and just thinking, so getting rid of Logan Mankins and Deion Branch and Wes Welker and all those guys trying to trade Gronk, that was all for Brady. But anyway, that's a conversation that we've had in the past. I will turn our attention to the Buffalo Bills' first playoff win since 1995. There are some interesting decisions on the other side by former Bill Frank Reich, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. We'll get to all of that with you. You're listening to NFL Sunday with Keefe and Kern. It's presented by Kaplansky Insurance. More choices, more savings, Kaplansky.com. By Zooty. Build any app your company needs fast. Visit Zooty.com for details. By Northeast Electrical and by the New England Recovery Center of Westboro.